Welcome to the Crude Life Podcast. My name is Jason Spies, and on this episode, we talk with Art Berman. Art Berman is a petroleum geologist with 37 years of oil and gas experience. Berman, an expert on U.S. shale plays, has given more than 25 keynote addresses at energy conference, board of directors meetings, and professional society events. He has published more than 100 articles on oil and gas plays and trends and has been interviewed by CBS, CNBC, CNN, Bloomberg, Platts, Financial Times, Wall Street Journal, Rolling Stone, The New York Times, and many other media outlets. In just a moment, my interview with Art Berman.
My name is Art Berman. I'm director of Labyrinth Consulting Services, which is a consulting firm out of Sugar Land, Texas.
Thank you for joining us today. Wanted to have you on the program because you talk a little bit about kind of some shale plays across the nation and a number of things. First of all, before we dive into the Bakken and your thoughts on the future of the Bakken, just kind of your background a little bit when it comes to the oil and gas business and the oil and gas just kind of analysis, if you will.
I am a petroleum geologist. I'm a working petroleum geologist. I spend most of my time making maps, figuring out where to drill wells, screening deals for clients, explaining the results of wells. And so my work on analysis of shale plays and economics and all of that, that's a profound interest of mine, but it's not the main thing I do, which doesn't mean it isn't any good. It just means that, I have a grounding in the business itself. And an awful lot of the people that comment on things like the Bakken and other plays are analysts with, smart people with degrees in economics or business, but without any experience in the oil and gas business. So I bring a little bit different perspective because I've done this for almost 40 years and continue to earn my living working as a geologist in the oil business, not an industry analyst.
So the headline that caught my attention was, being up here in North Dakota, everybody's wearing these Bakken-colored glasses where, even though everything's dropped a little bit, they're still saying, hey, it's gonna be great, and it is great and everything. And you were the first one actually to kind of come forward and say, hey, things aren't looking as good as they are here, people. Talk to me a little bit about your thoughts on the future, just maybe short-term or long-term, of the Bakken and kind of what some of your recent writing has been about.
Right. Well, I've been, I guess you'd say, I don't know if a fan is the right word, but I've analyzed the Bakken many times over the years, and I've generally had positive conclusions about it. I like the play geologically. I like the economics, as long as you're in the core area. And so when I looked at it recently, I expected to see more of the same. Obviously, with lower oil prices, the commercial area is going to be smaller. That's nothing shocking. But when I did the analysis, I was surprised to see very strong evidence supporting what we call depletion. In other words, the results for wells that are drilled in more recent years, 2016, 15, 14, their reserves are not as high as wells drilled in previous years. That's a kind of a disturbing finding. And then when I looked into it more closely, I saw some very notable signs of depletion, which, not to get too technical, include first an increasing percentage of gas relative to oil and then decreasing, and I'll be glad to explain that, and an increasing percentage of water produced. So those are both kind of classic red flags that that the production is going to decline, that the best days are behind us, that wells are probably drilled too close together now for optimum production, and they're essentially stealing reserves from each other. So those are the findings that I came up with.
Boy, that's quite a bit to go over. Let's tackle a few of these here. The first one is the increased water. That one stood out to me. What do you mean by that, the increased water? I know they use quite a bit of water already, but you're finding that they may need to increase their supply of water to do fracking jobs?
Well, Jason, okay, so there's two things. When you frack a well, you pump quite a bit of water in, to create the fracturing. But that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about produced water. So you pump the water in, you do the fracture stimulation. Much of that water comes back rather quickly, and then you start producing oil. And in the case of most of these so-called shale plays, they produce a lot of water that comes from the formation itself or from formations that have been fractured into. So to give you some idea, the Bakken has produced something on the order of, say 2 billion barrels of oil over its life cycle, its history since maybe the 1960s, and it's produced about 1.5 billion barrels of water. Okay, so water production is just part of the natural flow of things. You get a lot of water with the oil, and that's nothing new. What's been happening recently, though, is that the percentage of water relative to the total liquids, water plus oil, has been increasing. And that's a signal that says that, you start producing more and more water, less and less oil. It costs money to produce the water, to dispose of the water. At some point, the economics become not worth, you just say forget it. We're spending too much money getting rid of the water. We're not making enough money on the oil. Now, we're not there yet. Don't get me wrong. The Bakken has many, many years of production left in it. It's just that its best days are behind it. And this should not surprise anybody. I mean, every oil field, it builds to a certain point, it reaches a peak of production, and then it declines. And these declines, last for years and years. I mean, it's physics. I mean, that's just what happens. And for some reason, the way that these shale plays have been, sold or advertised, people have the idea that they somehow never end. And of course, show me anything on Earth in life that is that way. But we've been drilling wells and oil wells for 150 years in this country, and there isn't a field that doesn't build, peak, and then eventually decline. That's just the way it works. And so the fact that this is happening in the Bakken is not unusual, not unpredictable. It's just that I think the public has gotten an impression from the way that this play has been promoted that it's a trough you can just keep going back to forever, and it never ends. It does.
What do you make of the officials who are supposed to be, elected officials that are supposed to inform the public on these types of trends? And I'm looking back when the Bakken first started, every public official said nobody saw this coming. And then when the price dropped and then everybody left and it kind of went down to the sweet spot, every official said nobody saw this coming. And now here you're coming out and you're saying it's the beginning of the end for the Bakken. And these same officials are coming forward and saying it's not true. In fact, they even did like some PR pieces to kind of counteract some of your claims. What do you make of the public officials, their responsibility, and just kind of how they're presenting this versus kind of what you've uncovered?
Yeah, it's interesting. I listened to the podcast from, I guess, about a week ago that the North Dakota Department of Mineral Resources, their monthly address, I guess, and I listened to the information that they discussed, and particularly Justin Kringstad with the North Dakota Pipeline Authority. He showed some information, or he talked about it, and he showed some slides that he used to counter my arguments, and so the problem with that is that he's just looking at cumulative production rates, okay? So he's saying, well, the first 8 months of wells that began production in 2016, that total production number is higher than wells in 2015, and therefore the well performance is better. And so what I would say is that, that's a perfectly fine shortcut method to get a a real general high-level view of how things are going. But what I did was much more detailed. I mean, I actually projected out the reserves of, you know, the wells of the eight major companies, and I saw that the reserves were declining annually. And so when I looked at the cumulative numbers, if you actually plot it up, yeah, the first 8 months of 2016 are higher, but the decline rates are much higher too. And so that means that those wells are, you know, they're already falling off really fast. This is the downside of technology, that we've developed a technology that's brilliant for creating super high rates, all this fracking and horizontal drilling, but it also, it's basically just a bigger spigot, you know? So you produce a whole lot more in the early days, but you run out of it faster. That's just the logic of it. That's the physics of it. That's what's happening. And so, you know, your question, what do I make of the officials? Well, first of all, I mean, they're not in the oil and gas business. So they're reciting information maybe that somebody that knows a little bit more than they do told them, and they're assuming that the people who told them that did a good job. And I'm not saying they didn't do a good job. I'm just saying that what they didn't address was whether I did a good job. They didn't address the thoroughness and the completeness and the fact that I come from a background where this is what I do for a living, and you don't have to agree with my interpretations. But just to dismiss them and say, oh, well, you know, we have some other information that suggests otherwise, without giving, kind of a fair hearing to, well, okay, what did we do versus what did he do? And you know, are they apples and apples, or are they apples and oranges? And that's the problem. And again, I'm not criticizing anybody. I'm just saying that, I don't know, maybe they have a vested interest in keeping people's expectations high. I can't say. I don't. My vested interest is in portraying what I believe to be the truth. I don't make any money off of putting together these analyses unless somebody wants to hire me later on to do some other work. So like I said in the beginning, I went into this thinking, okay, you know, it's going to look okay. It's going to look like it always does. And instead, I found something different. That's just what I found.
I wanted to ask you about the drilling of the wells too close together and how that might have some impact on things. That was actually one of the selling points in the Bakken in its early days, was the efficiency and how close the diminishing the footprint was the buzzword. So talk to me a little bit more about that, about how you're finding that people are drilling the wells too close together.
Well, let's be careful about, you know, what too close means, because I think the industry has done an excellent job of reducing the footprint, okay? So what they're doing in the Bakken is they're drilling these extremely long horizontal segments of the well, often, you know, 9,000-10,000 feet or more. And that gets a bigger drainage area for each well. So what's happened is that the average well spacing in the core area that I calculate as being commercial at $50, $50 oil prices, the average well is about 215 acres per well that's been drilled. And so by ordinary standards, in other words, comparing it to similar tight oil plays like in Texas, the Eagle Ford or the Permian, that's, you know, there's still plenty of room to infill. But those plays are being developed on, you know, 80 acres or 40 acre spacing. And here in the Bakken, I just said it's more than 200. The difference is that they're not drilling 10,000-foot horizontals in the Eagle Ford and the Permian, at least not yet. And the other difference is that the Bakken is actually, it's not a shale. It's a real sandstone reservoir. It's what we call tight. It's low permeability. But it's a decent reservoir to begin with, whereas a pure shale is a poorer reservoir. So what I'm saying, Jason, is that the optimum spacing that you want to drill in the Bakken, and nobody knows what that is. Now we do, I think, is probably something greater than 215 acres per well. You know, maybe it's 240 or 250 acres per well. What I'm saying is that the optimum spacing to have the wells not interfere with each other may have been exceeded already. That's all I'm saying. So it's not a question of drilling, you know, of having too big a footprint. It's just what's the right number of wells to drain the reservoir without spending too much money by drilling more wells.
Arthur Berman, a petroleum geologist on the line with us, a shale expert. Just a couple more questions to wrap up the interview here. And I like to bring up the fact that in the 90s, we had about a decade of low oil prices. And, you know, maybe 1 or 2 years, it spiked up a little bit. For the most part, though, oil prices were relatively low. And when I hear everybody talk about, you know, $100 oil and $60, $70 oil and these types of things, I can't help but remember the 90s, where it's not unprecedented to have a very long period of time with low oil prices. Does that ever come into your mind or thought? Do you ever think about that?
Oh, absolutely. So what you're referring to is that we've gone through two very significant oil production bubbles in the last 50 years. And so back in the 1970s, there was the so-called Arab oil embargo, big long gas lines in the United States, and those of us old enough remember that. Started with the 1973-74 so-called Arab-Israeli war, and then the Iran-Iraq war caused some more problems. And so between the late 1970s or mid-70s to late 70s, oil prices went really, really high. In today's dollars, you know, they were like $120 a barrel. And that lasted for not very long, and what that does is it creates huge dislocations in the global economy because the world runs on oil. It did then and it does now. And so prices collapsed, and we went through a period from basically 1982 until, you know, as you say, the 90s and, to, you know, into the early 2000s, where oil prices were extremely low. They averaged something like, you know, about $35 a barrel in today's dollars. Then they started increasing again in the early 2000s, reached a nosebleed level in 2008 of almost $150 a barrel, went down a little bit during the financial crisis, and then went right back up to over $100 a barrel for 4 years between 2010 and 2014. So the collapse in oil prices that we're living with now is the second adjustment, you know, the big dislocation in the global economy to having to deal with really, really high oil prices. Everything runs on energy, and oil is the dominant form of energy in the world today. You know, you make things, you gotta manufacture them, that uses energy. A lot of that is electricity for sure. But you transport things, you use oil to move things on ships and in trucks and whatever, and we're driving more, and transportation is a, you know, a huge source of consumption of oil. So we're in the second, we popped the bubble for a second time. And we're living with that right now, and it's going to be a while before that corrects itself, is my guess.
Any final thoughts you might have? I usually like to give guests free rein, whatever direction they want to go at the end, whether it's to emphasize a point or go a whole new direction or just restate something that they feel is important. So final thoughts, final word, and the floor is yours, sir.
Yeah, well, thank you for that, Jason. So a couple of things, you know, going back to the podcast that the Department of Mineral Resources had last week, you know, they acknowledged the fact that the, you know, the gas to oil ratio was increasing, and they dismissed that as, oh well, that's just normal. That's what happens, and of course it does. But they didn't address what I really made a point of, which was now it's decreasing. That means that the energy in the reservoir is declining, okay? And it's the expansion of the gas that brings the oil to the surface, and if the gas is now declining, then there's no energy to bring the oil to the surface. The other thing they said, they addressed the increased water cut, and they said, oh, well, you know, basically he doesn't know what he's talking about, and that is because the water percentage in the Bakken and the Three Forks are different, and so he must be, you know, mixing and matching and including them all because it's higher for the Three Forks. And, you know, they made that, you know, kind of go away. And you know, what they're saying may be true, but that doesn't change the fact that the percentage of water is going up. And that's not a good thing. So, you know, those are my concluding comments on the so-called rebuttal to my observations. But to go back to the point I made before for your listeners and for the public in general, you know, we got to get real about this. I mean, the Bakken is not different. Shale plays are not different from, you know, from traditional oil fields, oil plays, and oil production. They're like people. I mean, you grow, you reach a peak, and then you get old, you decline. And so to think that, well, this is unthinkable, how can this possibly be happening, is basically unrealistic. It defies the laws of nature. So there's nothing wrong with this. The Bakken is a great play. It's going to continue to produce for a long time, and it's going to make people, you know, some money, but it's, you know, to go back to what it was is unrealistic and unlikely. And if you drill more wells, the rates will go back up a little bit, but it's a diminishing returns kind of thing. You know, you're running through what's left faster. So, you know, it's been a good run.
And that was shale play expert and petroleum geologist Art Berman. For other full-length interviews and more information on The Crude Life, visit our website at www.thecrudelife.com. Be sure to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and most importantly, be happy. My name is Jason Spies, and we'll see you next time, folks.
That holds us laughing, and here's to the sound of one hand clapping, and here's to not letting this moment pass. And here's to carrying the weight of the world, and here's to screaming, yeah, never being heard, and here's to not letting this moment pass.
My name is Otis, and I am the host of the Kids in Capitalism KidCast. Let me tell you about one of our sponsors. Hatch Realty is in the business of helping people. They just happen to sell real estate. Call Eric Hatch or anyone on the Hatch Realty team with any real estate question. They want to be a resource and connection for you. That's Hatch Realty, 701-212-1572. That's 701-212-1572. Hatch Realty, in the business of helping people. They just happen to sell real estate. Hatch Realty, tell them Otis sent you.
Since 1979, MBI Energy Services has committed to responsibly growing with today's oil and gas industry by providing proven experience, strategic locations, and integrated services. MBI Energy Services is well established, and its innovation in safety and excellent customer service is what truly makes MBI Energy Services the oil field service professionals. MBI Energy Services, the cutting edge in oil field safety solutions. Learn more at MBIEnergyServices.com.